Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and today I'm joined by a favourite person of mine who I've been lucky to interview before on my other show, so I'll include some links. Our guest is a psychiatrist by training, but has a specialist interest also in relationships. She's gone on to explore counselling as a way to support people with their relationships and mental health more broadly across the US and even internationally now. In the episode, we'll be getting into how COVID is affecting all our relationships and also exploring some of the ways that gender expectations influence our guest's work and the clients that she works with. So please welcome to the podcast, Laura Dabney.
Thank you so much for having me, Bobby. It's always fun to talk with you. We've been seeing a lot of changes in our office here with the pandemic. And with my population of working with executive men with relationship problems, you know, that's really added an extra strain on them. In particular, they seem to get more buried in their work while their significant other suffers more. I mean, so their significant others are handling this pandemic sort of alone. Because they're running off and escaping into their business. I think a lot of people, businesses have been impacted, their work lives, but not the executive men, because they typically were already out or online, you know, doing a more hands-off approach. But now I have a lot of them coming in saying things are even harder at home because their wives had to give up their part-time jobs or their jobs in order to, you know, be a parent and a teacher.
Yeah, that's really tricky because we were talking about it a little bit before recording, and I know that communication is an issue that a lot of your clients have, and there can be this sort of defensive mindset they can sometimes have, because if you're a high-powered executive, there's that kind of, I communicate with people all over the world. What do you mean I can't communicate?
Exactly. That's exactly what they say. Like, everybody at work thinks I'm the best thing ever. They call me. They always have some name that they're called, and everybody loves me, and I get home and I'm the bad guy, and they can't understand how that happens.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of gender expectations, that historically there was this idea that you go out and be the breadwinner and that's mostly it, that if you're doing that, that's your manly duty. And of course we live in a world now where a lot of those expectations are breaking down and becoming a bit more crossed over with genders. And maybe in these organizations where you're at the top and it's still quite a macho environment, a certain amount of that thinking is still reinforced.
Exactly. So, you know, I always see a lot of this was their parents acted in this sort of way, and then they sort of adopted it. But societally, definitely, they also get this message. So it's reinforced all over the place. But it's like they learned a set of rules on their own. A lot of these men were left alone. They come from unbelievable backgrounds where they were sort of left to their own devices, either in a bad way, or they were so advanced in their ability to get things done that their parents were like, okay, you're good to go. You're like a little adult. So they would often have several jobs growing up, and then it just snowballs and everybody turns to them. So their whole identity gets wrapped up in this whole, I help everybody. You know, I save people. I make money. I can make anything happen in that world. But they think those rules apply at home, and they really are shocked that those rules don't apply at home. So they missed out on the two languages that we all need to have going into the work world and then into our personal relationships. In fact, they feel that they're at odds with each other. So I always say we have to add this component, the home talk component. They're not exclusive, mutually exclusive. And often the home talk involves being more transparent. You and I talked about intimacy being more transparent, but they see that as being more vulnerable. If I tell you I'm angry, if I tell you I'm sad, or I tell you I'm hurt, that gives you the opportunity to walk all over me and get the deal done, you know. So they see emotions as being all negative. Expressing emotions is all negative. And that's where they get in trouble at home.
Wow, that's so fascinating. You definitely get a point right there. And I think that's something I can also relate to as well, that when I was younger, I was one of those people where I was quite a parentified child. I was working from 16, which is for the most part the youngest you can work here in the UK. So, you know, I was building up a lot of that identity and independence through that. And I actually found that in many ways, I seemed to make more sense in the working world, that a lot of the way my parents were being very high powered, being, you know, more on the workaholic side, those behaviors that I'd picked up helped me really excel in that environment and, yeah, win people over and win a lot of respect. But then actually, when I came through periods of hardship in my life and with my mental health, then my default was to work harder. And that's where my relationships and including my friendships then were starting to suffer.
Exactly. I mean, it's really interesting to hear your viewpoint and how in families where work is important to learn, but when that sort of becomes the goal or we're done, that's a signal for parents that we're done with our job, that's really where it starts to fall apart for the developmental learning of children. For instance, I have two sons. My husband's also a physician. We're both physicians, obviously very busy households. My children were just fine in school, so I really was not a lot of work I had to do there. But I have one son who's just very comfortable with his constructive aggression and, you know, come at something that he wants with warp speed. And we have to always, you have to tone it down. You're coming across as this, I'm feeling this when you're doing, help him with that piece. And my other son's the opposite. The other son says, you know, we'll start talking about something. He's like, okay, whatever you say. And then he walks and they will come back. You're actually leaving the table. You're not telling us how you really feel. I get the sense from this, you know, you're not so happy with this. You know, so one voice saying, come forward, and the other one's like, back off. But they took those two things, you know, the other side. You have to teach your children other way of communicating when they're not in the workplace.
Yeah. And I think that separation is so important. And it's something that I do worry about from a schooling perspective. And obviously, I do my campaigning for mental health education. And it all kind of links together, right? That we're raised in these schooling environments. And the focus is so much on the next steps in terms of your career or your academic achievement. But consistently, research tends to show that when it comes to factors in happiness, it's the connections to others that actually trump the workplaces. And actually, even if the workplace is the thing that's stressing you out, it's often to do, again, with the people at work.
Yeah, oh, that's right. So people will come with me saying, it's just my wife. She's the one I can't make happy. But once we get going and we start talking about these, they realize it's actually a lot of people who are, they're not really connecting well with, but they just didn't see, the signs weren't as obvious. But yes, communications are important for business as well. It's just getting them to believe it. That's the hard part.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think you've got an additional challenge that whilst your insight is so incredible around this particular group of men that you specially work with, I can see it's also can be quite a challenging group to work with because they're probably less used to being told that they're wrong than a lot of people.
Right. But we have to consider another viewpoint or something way out here that they think is fluffy or why is that important? At the start from, you know, negative zero. It isn't like they come in and they say, well, I need help with, we first have to convince them that's worth paying attention to. I mean, it takes that trust building part of therapy to get them to that point where they typically have to fall on their face a lot while they're in therapy. And for us to sit there and pull it apart for them to finally see, oh, okay, this is important. I get it now. But that's a huge step right there.
Yeah. And it's an uncomfortable thing. And that's something that I don't think anyone, irrespective of gender, is really taught from a young age, what power there can be in failure, what opportunity for learning is there.
Oh, yeah, that's a very important lesson. It's, again, hard for a lot of people to grasp or really embrace, like you're saying, especially this population where the successes are just, I don't want to say so easy. They work hard for them, but they're just so reinforcing of this idea that I can do it. The failure is not in my vocabulary. And so they keep working around it. And there's some degree of that's true. If you really want something, you can work around it. But then fortunately, sometimes can't get to that point where, okay, this isn't working. And then get the advice from somebody else. You may be better at taking on this role. I have to be able to have that insight that, okay, so this maybe is not my area of specialty. Somebody else may come in and
have a better viewpoint, a better set of skills to get that ball rolling in that direction. What I always say is no one has to die, right? A lot of people come in with, they're arguing a lot at home, in part because they're not able to express, but even when they are able to express, if the other person's on a different page, they think they have to be on the same page in order to move on. And I'm saying, you know, you're never going to be on the same page. You're two different people completely. Very rarely are you going to be exactly thinking the same. So if you think this is right and she thinks this is right, the next step is to, okay, how do we take these two right pieces and put them together with something we can live with? But they either think, well, I have to convince her that I'm right, or I have to capitulate and take on her viewpoint for us to move forward.
It is really tricky. And I think as a global society, we seem to have lost sight of, for various reasons at the moment, this idea of right and wrong has become so political and partisan. And, you know, maybe it's to do with fake news, the fact that now we have fake facts and real facts, which, you know, is still something I think we're all wrapping our head around. But if people are having that difficulty in a relationship of communicating vastly different viewpoints, do you have any tactics or approaches you recommend of getting over that without it becoming an argument?
Well, that's a good point too. So the template I give everybody is, I feel X when you do Y. So instead of attacking the other person for what they're doing, in other words, you have to say you're wrong, or being sort of belligerent where I'm right. Here's the Google facts that I'm right. You know, they start giving these facts, or these are all the people that agree with me. Just to simply, it's very upsetting when you tell that story about me in public. By saying it in that phraseology, again, no one's dying here. The other person isn't wrong or right. It just doesn't work for you. And because it brings up this feeling, and that way you're compelling somebody. When someone loves you, cares about you, it's the feeling that propels them into action. It's not the fact that 30 people agree with you and nobody agrees with the other person. That's not what compels people, or being told what to do. You should, you must, anybody else would do, blah, blah, blah. That just pushes people away. It's the saying, I'm in some pain here, can you help me with that, is way more motivating to a significant other.
And I think it's quite a motive way of approaching it as well. Like, right. I really love that way of looking at it, that hopefully snaps somebody out of, if they're a very thinking person and they want to look at it in a logical way and pick apart, you shouldn't be upset right now, or you shouldn't feel this way. But as we know, emotions aren't logical, that there has to be some compromise where you acknowledge that someone's upset can be valid, even if it doesn't make sense to you.
And it can work in reverse. A lot of times when the other person is using all this logic and everything, I had a talk with a young lady about this who's engaged, and she's wondering about staying engaged because her significant other all of a sudden starts pulling out all this odd logic, and she gets caught up in the logic. She's like, well, that's not true. This isn't right. What do you mean? So I had to help her put what she's suspecting he's feeling. It looks like you're very upset about what I said earlier. So he can start learning that saying that or recognizing that is A, more productive, and B, it's okay. It's okay to start with, I'm upset, as opposed to all these weird facts.
I love that. It's a great point. And I think it's, again, maybe a like workplace mentality. It's a like very kind of linear deal-making mentality in a way. And I think that's something that I can relate to as well. So if anybody follows the Myers-Briggs personality types, I'm an ENTP, and I'm very high on the thinking. I'm very high on the extroverted scale as well. So that means I can be quite dominant with my opinions. And something I've had to learn is to sort of judge the appropriate timings of that and find ways to connect to a more emotive space as well, particularly because I think, not by coincidence, I tend to end up getting into relationships with people that are more on the feeling side, that kind of balance me out in that way. And so Unless I'm careful, we can easily find ourselves just speaking different languages.
Right, exactly. So what happens is, so I'm teaching them this to do at home. They're like, well, I'm not going to tell my feelings at work. And, well, right, you're not. You pay people. That offsets your saying, you know, I need you to get this done today. This doesn't work for me. This report you did is not up to par. I need you to do blah, blah, blah. So you pay them to balance that out. You don't have that at home. You're not paying them to take your orders. So it can't be an order. It has to come with some feeling to pull that down, and a partnership. As soon as you start talking about this, how I feel, could you please do X? You're inviting them into a discussion. They may say, well, I can't do X. Like, okay, well, what can you do to help me with this problem or this, because it's coming between our relationship.
That's so interesting. And so with the pandemic, I'm really interested to hear how this is affecting your clients. In a way, maybe they've got less excuse to have issues in a relationship in that, you know, let's say they were working long hours and that was part of the communication issues, right? Or maybe they weren't spending as much time with the kids because they're, you know, at school, and now a lot of these barriers are removed. But I think as we're all finding, it doesn't necessarily make for easier relationships.
Right, because the relationship problem is there, it's going to be magnified by the more time at home, or by the fact that if the other parent, let's say that we'll just use the wife in this case, has to give up her job to now be a teacher, stay home with the child because their school's out, this person feels, the executive feels like, I got to work more to make up for the loss of income over here. So they could either be disappearing more or home in conflict more with their significant other. So I see this with anything like hurricanes or major storms or major stressors, just, you know, make those little problems even more in the spotlight. So,
and I think in many ways, there are additional pressures, you know, that are coming in externally as well. So you're probably going to be tactile with less people. You're maybe not seeing many family members, depending on what the lockdown status is where you live. And so that then creates a lot of this additional pressure that you are the person that I'm spending not just more time with, but I'm spending less time with other people. So any difficulties we're having here are a larger part of my focus now.
Exactly. So, I mean, they've done psychological studies showing that connecting with people, that overall feeling of well-being, if you're talking with somebody, it pulls up some of the well-being. If you're seeing the person and talking to them, it brings up the well-being even more. But if you have that tactile component, it's at the highest. That well-being component is at its highest. So we really, when people say it's not the same and they can't describe it, even with a Zoom call with someone, it's because you don't have that pat on the back or hug at the beginning of the meeting or when you leave or something. So the whole interacting is changed. I even found myself missing the handshake. When I meet somebody, I never touch my patients since I'm a psychiatrist, but I do have that handshake at the beginning. I did not realize how much of just that one little handshake is sort of solidifies a start to a relationship in counseling or therapy with me. And it's been hard for me to let that go.
I think we're all sort of relearning the value of connection. And I'm certainly see it come out in certain stress release behaviors around friends of mine. So now we're able to start seeing people again a little bit, you know, mainly outdoors or restaurants, you know, conveniently things related to the economy. And even with that, you know, friends where I'm noticing that now they're consciously not touching me, they're then instead like, you know, they've got their arms crossed or they're rubbing at the shoulder subconsciously, because it's just this sort of deflection where usually without even thinking of it, you know, they might laugh and they, you know, put a hand down on your arm or whatever.
Right. And just to take that step further, the face masks, I didn't realize how much I'm dependent on the facial expressions to see where I'm at with a story or some description of something. But it drives me crazy that I can't see how they're reacting. Only if they're smiling very broadly can you see the wrinkling around the eyes and guess that they're smiling broadly. But other than that, you're at a loss. And it's also been something very just unbelievable, the missing there, and keeps me from getting that super close feeling.
Yeah. And I think particularly when it's maybe newer people and you're still getting an idea of their emotions, but even with people we know very well, like with my counselor, we've been seeing each other over video like this, and it's been really nice to still be able to see her, and everything is the same. We're just chatting from our homes. And actually, I think I'd be quite reluctant to go back to her office too soon, because then if we're in masks, maybe it's just me, but I think I'd be sat there like staring at her mask, you know, analyzing it, being like, oh, what a design. I wonder if she's got different ones. You know, like, I think we're just so used to like reading somebody's face that you could actually just easily get quite thrown off.
when my patients go on the couch and stop looking at me face to face, we have to have this conversation about what they're imagining I'm thinking and feeling. And sometimes that it's so anxiety provoking that they can't see my expression. They have to sit back up again for a while. But sometimes not seeing the face, they say, helps them with their sense of shame. They think their feelings, if they're putting them out there, are shameful. So it can be helpful to not see my expression.
Mm, interesting. With all these changes in your work life, have you found it affecting your relationship at all? Have you had to be more active in certain ways?
The woman I had who greeted people sort of front and center, she's now in an office, so there's nobody to see, and really not too much has changed. Some people were uncomfortable coming in, even despite all that. So there are more Zoom videos, and those I feel like I have to be a little bit more, again, because it's just some separation there. I feel like I have to be a little bit more vocal when I do therapy online than I do in the office. Defer more to small gestures, even like posture, to convey comfort or discomfort or something. Sometimes I'm even totally unconscious of it. It's putting these little things that I'm noticing about myself into words. So I've had to be more proactive when I'm online, for sure.
Mm. And are you finding the things that you often recommend as tactics to your clients, you are now having to focus on more in your own life?
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time. Everything I do at home, I think about in terms of my work. And then when I do something at work or see something at work, I think about how it impacts my home life or my relationships. That's what's great about being a therapist. It's like, it's a two for one. You know, you get to be working on yourself and your relationships at the same time you're helping somebody else. It all comes together, which I love.
This week, we're really excited to talk about a service that's keeping us busy this lockdown. HelloFresh delivers everything you need to create delicious meals from scratch so you spend less time shopping, with seasonal ingredients and step-by-step recipe cards all delivered straight to your door.
And actually, making a meal can really bring your household or support bubble together to get my whole family involved. And we really were pleasantly surprised that each meal was so easy and actually looked like the pictures that it sent you, which was like a triumph, like, oh, we've made it. We've made what you've sent us. And all for as little as £3.44 per person, which is great. And what was even better, my favourite thing about it, is that you get literally all of the ingredients, like everything, a bit of garlic. You don't need to open your cupboard or your fridge at all, because we all know how annoying it is when, like, a recipe says, you know, creme fraiche or some, like, random pesto with an unusual ingredient. You never use it again. So the fact that anything that you might need is literally sent to you in these beautiful little cute recycling pots, and functional, and it's enjoyable and tasty.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I cooked with Kat, my flatmate, and it was really fun. We just realized that we'd never actually made a meal together. You know, we'd done bits and pieces and that was it. So it was really nice to have this new thing in our routine where we can decide which meal we're making which night. And I couldn't help but think, you know, how great it'd be for couples as well. Yeah. You know, you can turn it into a whole date night at a time when we can't go to a restaurant, but you can have this new meal that you've never cooked before and see how it goes. And our listeners can try it out as well with a special listener offer. So you'll get 50% off your first HelloFresh box and a third off the next three if you want more with our code dating. I'd really encourage you to give it a try at hellofresh.co.uk and enter the code dating to redeem this offer. The details will be in the episode description. It's fun. We need something to distract ourselves from what's going on in the world right now. And maybe this is it. Distract yourself with good, nutritious, healthy food and thank us later.
Yeah.
Now back to the podcast.
One of the things I'm seeing with my patients that is sort of new, and I haven't seen out there, you can tell me if you've seen this, but the differences, a lot of people are talking about how they feel about their kids coming home or their kids coming home and then leaving again, but no one's talking about how there's differences in couples. A lot of couples aren't on the same page in terms of how safe they feel. So someone may be kind of, like you said, going out now to outdoor restaurants and seeing some people where the other person's not, and how they navigate this is, of course, how to navigate all being on a different page all the time. But there's this whole new, like you said, the fake news, nowhere to go to get absolute information because we just don't know yet. We're still all learning about this COVID. So it ends up being a feeling that we shouldn't be out in public. And there's a feeling that we're okay being out in some public. And trying to navigate that between couples has been tricky.
I've definitely seen that. And I think it can create so much anxiety that you need then your partner to empathize with, particularly if they're not feeling the same way. So something I've seen with my co-host was that she was very keen for her kids to go back to school as soon as they could. As soon as it was allowed, she was like, yeah, they can go. And actually her partner, he was a lot less keen. And right. I've seen that create a lot of conflict in relationships. And I think, again, it can create particular issues of these different viewpoints, because she's also the one that's done more of the homeschooling. And I think oftentimes it does seem to be the parent that's been looking after the kids more that's like, you know, ready for them to go back.
Right, exactly. Same thing with the family weddings, right? So if one family has some event going on, they are okay, they want to take that short flight out, and the other one's like, well, I'm not so sure. It tends to be the one who's not their family. A lot of times some people are using the pandemic to help them with a certain anxiety that already pre-existed, either a social anxiety or a anxiety about being in public, not an agoraphobia, but a more of a exposure or social life was too much for them, or they were doing it to help their husband's job, or just because now they're like, well, no, I don't want to go because of COVID. And that I'm trying to help people not use COVID as a substitute for something else that may be more important for them to realize. Like maybe they didn't realize that they were angry about doing something because they quote unquote had to. And then to explore, well, what's kept you from saying, I just don't want to, instead of using an excuse like COVID.
Wow, that's such a good point. And it's one that I'd not really thought about, because I'd come across it a lot where certain people are finding their life better in some ways during the pandemic. And it's something that they can feel quite almost ashamed over, that they feel it's the wrong thing to say, that with everything that's going on, with how horrible it's been, for them to actually be happier. But it comes down to other things in their life that may have changed, certain pressures that have gone away. And something I've been very worried about is, on one hand, that's good, but you're giving me the other side of it, where actually certain issues people already had, now they're folding under a COVID level. So on one hand, if you're anxious and someone asks you why and you say it's because of the pandemic, people are so understanding about that right now in a way that they might not have been about your anxiety before. But then there's a trap of it almost could become your crutch, where you say you're worried of it, even if you're not.
Right. And just to follow up on what you said, what was keeping you from making your life happy before COVID? Why couldn't you? They're like, oh, I get to stay home now and work. And what kept you from negotiating that with your bosses or people at work before? So it's trying to help them find out what is working for them here, but understand they can recreate that when the COVID is over.
And definitely to put my mental health hat on, that's a concern I have. That on one hand, it's great that there is this sort of shared mentality of we need to get through this, and changes and adaptations need to be made so we can all do that. But at the same time, it should have been valid enough before. If your mental health or your relationship, whatever it was under pressure because of your lifestyle, that should have been enough to change it in the first place. But then, exactly. You know, stigma and other reasons.
Exactly. Or what they imagine is going to come. A lot of people have this fantasy punishment is going to come if I don't want to socialize every weekend. You know, so you have to help them with that underlying expectations or ideas that really come from some other incident long ago. They're just remembering something from when they were young and didn't have the capacity to set boundaries or remove themselves or get away. And they're just remembering life. They're having a memory from when they're very young, when they didn't have those capacities. You have to help them realize you're not the same person anymore.
Yeah. And one thing I'm experiencing with my flatmate Kat, which I'd be interested to know if you're seeing this with a lot of relationships, is we, particularly in the initial stages of the lockdown, spent a lot of time separately, that we were really glad to be living together. And we still are. And I can't help but look back on some of the people I've lived with in the past and think, thank God it wasn't you. But at the same time, you know, there was so much to take in. There was a sort of like news overload going on, and we were feeling quite exhausted by it and by all the ways we had to adapt our lives. So then we actually spent quite a bit of time talking to other people on the phone or just being in different rooms as a way to sort of decompress.
Right. My husband and I had a very similar reaction. We were just so, that whole cut off from everybody so suddenly. And I would say he's the more social one, but I was feeling it too. So we started the Zoom meetings with our friends long before some of them had even heard about it. So it's kind of cool to see it exploding like this. My husband at first thought that was going to be just ridiculous and too stilted and not the same, but we pushed through and gave it a try. And we ended up liking him a lot more than we thought. And in fact, some of our friends that are out of state and we don't get to see too much, we're continuing it, even though he and I are a little bit more comfortable about going to see people now.
Well, that's really nice to hear. And the other thing I feel like we have to mention is the breakups that have been happening. So before we started, I mentioned the term COVID breakup that I'm starting to hear about the place. And that was part of the reason why we were keen to even launch a show now, because we were increasingly seeing there's no point putting off any longer. We are going to be talking about the pandemic with relationships for so long. So what are you seeing in terms of those breakups happening?
Yeah, I've been seeing in terms of when the parents are now at home more and they're just finding, oh my gosh, everything, all the small irritations have now become these huge, and they're so completely overwhelmed with how to deal with these huge, quote unquote, huge problems. And so sometimes they just, even before, they'll make an appointment to come in, and then even before they get in here, they're like, well, we've already broken up. It's just feels so overwhelming to be in a small space, typically smaller, with adult kids, college kids coming home, and they just have all these problems right here and have no way of dealing with them. He can't go to the office, or she can't go to the office to get some perspective, give it some time, have his feelings come down. Again, they're not pulling in, you know, why can't you have these escape routes without, you know, a pandemic? With the pandemic, I mean, why can't you say, look, this is overwhelming, let me step away? But they just don't have the words for that, or feel they can't do that. Breakups I've seen have been mostly in those realms.
Yeah, definitely. That's the point. I'd not thought of it. I thought of it in terms of this shining a light on existing issues in relationships and making them more intense. But I'd not thought of that speed factor, that you spending more time together or you just feeling under more pressure, even if you're not, could really speed up a breakup as well.
Right. All the little problems become huge. The other thing I've been seeing is some women are, it happens with men too, but I've seen it mostly with women, where they had some separation anxiety from their older children that was causing a strain. And if the husband was waiting for, you know, almost not even consciously waiting for the kids to go to college, so now they had more time with the wife or together. Again, why couldn't they carve that out with the kids being home? It's another story. But their kids are now, the mom's saying, come home, stay here, don't go back to college, don't go back, it's too dangerous. And he's feeling left out and just feels not important and sort of drifts away from the family because of that.
I can see that it's a whole combination of factors. And I imagine the default then would often be, oh, well, I guess I go back to working crazy hours again.
Right, exactly. And because she doesn't care, she cares more about them than me. I tell my patients all the time, you know, you have to build in, especially when the kids are small, you have to build in some time, regular time, every whatever, preferably daily, but every other day, once a week, it's fine, where just you two are alone. And I can't tell you how many people have struggled to do that. Even if it's just to have coffee every Friday after dinner when the kids go to bed, either they become so afraid of fighting that they just don't want to risk it. I've had couples tell me that, too much of a risk. We were getting along. I didn't want to spend time alone with him because I thought something bad would come up. But then the flip side of that is they come when the kids go away and they don't know each other at all. They've allowed the kids' schedule to rule everything.
And that's so scary to think of people avoiding their significant other because they're worried that spending time together will create problems. I mean, it doesn't really bode well for the relationship. So hopefully they're already seeing you at that point.
Yeah, well, it's very common. They'll be in therapy for months. And I, you know, try to keep encouraging them to find this time. Well, we can't, we don't know. Then when it comes down to it, they're like, well, we're just starting to make, you know, some traction here and we don't want to blow it.
You know,
And I think that even is a trap as well that can be exacerbated right now, that this issue of having a relationship via your kids and the time, which for me personally, I find that to be the most toxic, is when I've known parents or friends of mine who have stayed together because of the kids. So they've stayed in an unhappy marriage that they already feel is over, and they're just waiting to what seems like the right time for the kids. And then what they inadvertently end up doing is teaching a very dangerous template of this is how to have a loveless marriage.
But also gives the kid this huge amount of power that they don't have, right? So the kids believe, wow, I can either keep mommy and daddy together or break them apart. Having that kind of power that's not even real, it can be very anxiety provoking. It's almost like walking around with a loaded gun. You know, like, oh my God, they're going to stay together because of me or not. Those children grow up and have, you know, go off to college, and they have this tremendous amount of anxiety at college because they're like, I don't know how my parents are doing without me.
Mm-hmm.
They need me involved in some way.
For sure, because it can be easy and comfortable even to think that young people, even, you know, right up until that sort of going off to college age, don't have much awareness or understanding of their parents' relationship. And of course they do. In fact, you're the adult template that they've spent the most time around and been the most influenced by. So maybe it's that I'm young. I find that quite patronizing, but I know it's a common way of looking at it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was coaching my parents to say, even to themselves, we're staying together because we think it's in our best interest to stay together, as opposed to we're staying together to make the kids happy. It's just not right. To say that. So it's taking ownership of their decision. So therefore, they're the template for the child now knows, okay, I do things in my own best interest. I'm my own advocate. I need to do things for me, not take care of everybody else at my expense.
Right. I have personally learned a lot there. Thank you so much for joining me. The last thing we'll wrap up on then is our rules of the game. So do you have a rule that you think more people should live by when it comes to dating and relationships?
Well, I think back to my no one has to die is probably the one I use the most. So I'll give that one out there, where you can have a disagreement and be on a separate page with somebody. It's not the end of your relationship or the end of the world. You can state your side, your viewpoint, and I feel this when you do that, but then empathically listen to the other person, listen to their viewpoint, and don't be so threatened by it. It's going to be different most of the time. But take those two differences and put them together, work with your significant other as a partner to come up with some kind of a compromise between those two different pages.
Yeah. And I think I'll add something that's very much come out in the chat as well, which is if you want happy kids, work at being happy parents.
Yes. If you want your child to have effective emotional relationships with their friends, significant others, as they grow, you have to demonstrate that to them. I can't tell you how many parents, their kids start getting in middle school where they have brains. I mean, their intellect is growing vastly, but they're not using that intellect. They're still taking things away or grounding them as a form of punishment when they're not doing the talking. You have to talk to your kid about what they're feeling, what they're doing, what are they thinking? What were you, why did you do that? What were you thinking? What's going to happen now? What are your suggestions of how to fix this? And help them to get over some problem that way, as opposed to this cut and dry, well, now we're taking this away for a week, which isn't going to happen in the real world. You want them to start thinking through these problems, and they're not going to do it unless you encourage them and show them how.
Right. And I think it's maybe a generational thing as well, because the obvious punishment nowadays is you take the internet off them. And I kind of think good luck when the kids are so tech savvy.
Exactly. They're going to come work around that. That's the other thing, right? They're smarter than us half the time with these kind of things. And they're going to work around it anyway, whatever you take away. They're going to use their friends or whatever. So it's much better to have a conversation with them about it, go over the consequences and the feelings and all that that are surrounded, as opposed to taking something away. It's pointless.
For sure. So thank you so much for joining me from your office. If people want to find out more about you, where should they go?
You can go to my website, which is drldabney.com, drldabney.com, or give us a call. I love talking to people. 757-340-8800.
Wonderful. You're just so slick. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.